Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biagio, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, November 14th, 2014. Junggulay state lawmakers approve a fiscal budget, but will it solve the state's financial problems?
We are very proud of as a government that we introduce in this budget 50%. Everybody, I think, should appreciate this. And everybody should really stand with this government.
And a plane crash kills two in Junggulay State, Twitch County.
The plane captured by LWF came to land, but it did not land on the first round, so it goes around. Then when it was coming back, before it could actually reach the ground, it was already staggering in the sky.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Yesterday, Junggulay State's Legislative Assembly passed its long-awaited 2014-2015 budget. The more than 300 million South Sudanese pound budget includes half of the overdue workers' allowances for government employees, some of whom went on strike to protest repeated delays. Although Junggulay officials say they are the first of South Sudan's states to provide this allowance payment, some observers say the new budget isn't nearly large enough to solve the state's problems. This report was written by Jacob Achek in Juba. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has more.
The newly approved Junggulay state budget takes effect immediately. State Finance Minister Dano Obongo says he and his colleagues were waiting for the national government budget to be approved before completing the state budget process. He says lawmakers are extremely proud of this budget, even though lingering security problems remain in Junggulay. Obongo is gratified that officials were able to finally come through on the housing allowance promise for state workers.
I believe among the few states in the in South Sudan to implement this house allowance. So our total budget is 327,314,568. This is include our resource envelope and our ceiling, and all these 50% within the our ceiling and our resource envelope.
Obongo says that Junggulay State is the third South Sudan state to pass its budget. He says state government officials must ensure that workers receive their 4 months back pay very soon so that employee morale does not become an issue again. Obongo says they have been given a budget ceiling by the national government, but says they can work within the budget framework.
It will be effective from this month of November immediately. But for your good information, the budget is supposed to start from July. And then we are going to implement. That will be reliability on the government of Junggulay to make sure that these 4 months also are paid for our beloved employees very soon.
Government spokesperson Judy Junggulay says the new state budget allocations reflect many positive initiatives, such as more funding for education, health, water and sanitation services.
We are very proud of as a government that we introduce in this budget 50%. Everybody, I think, should appreciate this. And everybody should really stand with this government. Because this government is actually working for the delivery of the services to the people of Junggulay State. The money we transfer to the counties this year is too much. It's a very big amount to the counties, which is constitute 67 million. To the counties, increased by 30%, 33%.
But even with the progress, Judy says that Junggulay faces increased challenges in the area of non-oil revenue collection. He says if peace is finally achieved between the government and opposition forces, officials may need to increase the allowances of state workers to provide improved services. Judy says the shortfall in oil revenue is part of the reason that Junggulay's budget is smaller than other states. Junggulay State MP Kuol Bol Ayom says it was especially important to recognize the efforts of teachers to ensure that children have continued access to education. He urged school teachers to reopen all schools that were closed due to frustration over the delayed allowance payments they had not received from the government. In October, Jonglei teachers went on strike to demand 10 months of unpaid housing allowances. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
That story was prepared by Jacoba Chek in Juba. Also in Jonglei State, a plane chartered by the Lutheran World Federation, or LWF, crashed today in Twitch East County. An eyewitness says two crew members died in the crash. The plane was carrying relief supplies for displaced persons in Panyagor, but crashed as it came in for landing at Mabior airstrip around 10 a.m. local time. Officials say several huts located south of the airstrip were also damaged. VOA fellow Michael Atit has this report on the crash, which was prepared by Jacob Achiek in Juba.
Garang Deng Ajak was at Mabior airstrip when the plane crashed. He says it appears that the plane's problems began when its front landing gear did not deploy during the final approach.
The plane chartered by LWF came to land, but it did not land on the first round, so it goes around. Then when it was coming back, before it could actually reach the ground, it was already staggering in the sky. We thought it was balancing the field. And abruptly, it goes down on high speed, then wanted to go up again, then it also come down.
Garang says the plane crashed about 20 meters short of the airstrip. He says it causes heavy damage to residents at the south end of the airstrip before breaking into the three pieces. He says one of the three crew members survived and is reported to be in good condition. He was seated at the back of the plane. Two other crew members who were seated near the front of the plane were killed.
According to the survivor, there were only three members of the crew that were in the plane. But he has survived and the other two are just intact in the plane with their seatbelt. They did not even struggle to come out. They have just run in front of the first segment of the plane. But the survivor was removed within the cartons that were at the rear part of the plane.
Two houses at the south end of the airstrip caught fire, Garang says. Several head of livestock that were in one of the houses were seriously injured, he says. He urged county authorities to relocate residents living near the airstrip. The director of Jonglei State's Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, Gabriel Deng Ajak, says the Lutheran World Federation plane was loaded with relief items.
Some were food items, some were non-food items, some were medicines. LWF has been chartering tents and delivering some humanitarian assistance by road, but due to the current road conditions, there were no option but to charter a flight to take the humanitarian items to the IDPs in Panyagor.
Deng says today's crash is the first such incident involving the Lutheran World Federation mission since the organization began working in Jonglei State in the 1990s. The plane's call sign indicates that it was chartered out of Kenya, but VOA has been unable to confirm this. It was also impossible to confirm how many crew members were on the plane and what their nationalities were. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit.
Again, that report was prepared by Jacob Achiek in Juba.
Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal is dismissing allegations that Sudanese troops raped 200 women during a raid in Darfur 2 weeks ago. Bilal told me by phone yesterday that the allegations are mere fabrications that have been made by opponents of the government in Khartoum.
Nothing of that has happened. And this is against our Sudanese, you know, tradition and Sudanese behavior. Something like that to this mass rape and these things. And in this village particularly, there are 30 of the soldiers are married and living there. So how can this come?
Just hours before I spoke with Bilal, dozens of people rallied outside European Union offices in Khartoum to protest the findings of an investigation that found no evidence that Sudanese soldiers committed mass rape in Darfur earlier this month. The investigation was carried out jointly by the African Union and the UN peacekeeping operation in Darfur, or UNAMID. The protesters want a new investigation to be held because the Sudanese government barred UNAMID for more than a week from interviewing the alleged victims in Darfur. When the AU and UN investigators were finally allowed to speak to the women, they did so in the presence of numerous Sudanese troops. Rights groups say the victims must have felt intimidated by the presence of the Sudanese soldiers, the very same group that is accused of raping the women. The protesters handed a petition calling for a new probe into the alleged rapes to the European Union ambassador in Khartoum. Sadiq Youssef is the head of Sudanese Solidarity Committee and one of the signatories of the petition.
We need the international community to press the government to hold an independent investigation, including the European Community, UNMIS, the United Nations forces, and the Sudanese national NGOs, to go and investigate what happened exactly in that village.
But Bilal says the findings of the first report by the AU and UNMIT are final. He says the government will not allow any further probes into the alleged incident.
This is interference. We will no longer permit anybody to interfere on our affairs like that. UNMIT is not from the Sudanese forces. They are international forces.
Mokesh Kabila is the former United Nations chief in Sudan. He lived in Darfur when the latest conflict there broke out in 2003. He says sexual violence, including mass rape, have long been part of the violence in Darfur.
And I witnessed that for myself in terms of my staff reporting these things on the ground and the survivors of rape talking to me. And this was the evidence that was put to the International Criminal Court.
Kabila recalls another mass rape involving Sudanese soldiers and militiamen in 2003. That happened in Tawila, in Darfur.
That was the triggering point for me as the head of the UN to speak up and to bring the world's attention to the Darfur genocide. Sexual violence has been a pattern in this crisis ever since those early days, and conducting mass rape is a very cheap and easy way to subjugate a population.
Kabila says it is not unusual for militia leaders to be involved in sexual violence in Darfur.
The way the violence has worked in Darfur and continues to work after 10 years is that local commanders allied with the Sudan army, often trained by them and armed by them, these are the Janjaweed, and the modern version of the Janjaweed, have the connivance of the authorities, including the governmental authorities of the provinces of Darfur, to go and terrorize the local population.
The U.S. State Department has said it is deeply concerned by the allegations of mass rape by Sudanese forces in Darfur and regretted that the government in Khartoum had delayed access by independent investigators to the alleged victims of the atrocities.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health workers mark the World Pneumonia Day by vaccinating more children in South Sudan. That story is coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you correct your friends' bad habits?
Well, I try to talk to them. Sometimes they find it offensive. Some accept it as it is. But when you tell someone and it's the right thing that you have said, they sit back and analyze themselves and they find it actually helpful.
I take them aside and then I tell them, you know what? You are not supposed to behave like this here. So why don't you try this? It could help you. That's the way I do it. But if that depends on, you know, a couple of people. Most people do not understand.
I talk them out of it. If they don't listen, then maybe I refer them to someone else who they're close and who can, I mean, improve their habits if it's the case.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. This week, the global health community marked World Pneumonia Day as an opportunity to raise awareness about the number one killer of children under age 5 worldwide. The French medical charity, Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF or Doctors Without Borders, is one of the leading healthcare providers in South Sudan and helped introduce the first pneumococcal vaccines in the nation back in July. But MSF says more needs to be done to reduce pneumonia-related deaths and widen access to the vaccine. Philip Tonaleo has the details for VOA from Juba.
Najim Leden Tespaye, MSF Country Medical Coordinator, says out of 500,000 consultations performed in MSF-run health facilities across South Sudan, 1 in 5 involves pneumonia infection.
Pneumonia is a very prevalent public health problem, not only in South Sudan, but in developing countries. With MSF having done close to 500,000 outpatient consultations and close to 30,000 admissions this year, we have around 20% of the cases being pneumonia, especially in children under 5 years of age.
Tespaye says 3.5% of all deaths registered following MSF admissions were related to pneumonia. He adds that MSF has made an intense effort to address the issue of pneumococcal disease, especially in children, by identifying the severity of cases and providing appropriate treatment. Tespaye says use of antibiotics is the most widely recommended strategy, but that is not easy to accomplish in a conflict-scared nation with scarce resources.
You need to have the facilities, you need to have the diagnostic tests, you need to have x-rays, you need to have the culture to identify whether this is viral pneumonia, bacterial pneumonia, fungal pneumonia. That will be a little bit difficult in South Sudan.
Tespaye says poor road networks also impede access to health facilities for people in rural communities. He says one way to lower the number of childhood pneumonia cases is through early vaccinations. He says the July 2014 introduction of pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, or PCV, in South Sudan was a big step forward. MSF introduced PCV at the Yida refugee camp, which sheltered thousands of Sudanese. MSF staff were greatly encouraged by the results.
The experience of Yida and the experience in other settings and other countries shows that introduction of pneumococcal vaccine significantly reduces morbidity and mortality from pneumococcus caused chest and respiratory tract infections in children.
So far, the PCV vaccine is not part of South Sudan's routine immunization program, but Tespaye believes it should be, and that South Sudanese health officials should learn from the Yida camp experience in order to significantly reduce cases of childhood pneumonia. Officials from South Sudan Ministry of Health declined to be interviewed for this story. Aside from vaccinating hundreds or more children, the Yida camp experience produced another good byproduct. It demonstrated to villagers in neighboring countries such as Kenya that vaccinating children is safe. MSF and other organizations have encountered major resistance to vaccination programs related to polio and tetanus in recent months. Tespaye says the MSF South Sudan experience suggests that local communities do not object to childhood immunization, but he says more must be done to inform and sensitize communities.
A woman who is properly educated about the importance of vaccines, we'll want to have her child vaccinated. But if we don't educate her properly, then it will be difficult to convince her that her child needs to get an injection which can be painful, make her child cry. So education, proper communication, and use of appropriate information, education, and communication tools in a setting like South Sudan is very important to increase the acceptance.
Each year, pneumonia kills approximately 936,000 children under the age of 5 worldwide. Early diagnosis of suspected cases of pneumonia and treatment with life-saving antibiotics is a cornerstone intervention provided to newborns and older children. Other strategies that could reduce pneumonia rates in children include enhancing local health centers, ensuring the availability of drugs, and proper data management to analyze and assess numbers of cases. For BOA News, I am Philip Tonaleo in Juba.
After hours of furious debate, South African politicians exchanged punches in the parliament late Thursday after the ruling party called riot police into the chamber. Political observers say this is the latest sign of growing boldness of an increasing organized opposition who are tired of African National Congress domination. VOA's Anita Powell has more from Johannesburg.
South Africa's parliament woke up with a figurative black eye Friday morning after riot police stormed chambers amid an argument that some analysts say is a sign of a widening political rift between new members of the opposition and the ruling African National Congress. Political analyst Ralph Matega says while many South Africans are talking about the brawling spectacle, this has big implications for the political dialogue.
We have never seen this in South Africa before. It is unprecedented, and I say that this is a very essential development in Parliament, and I think it says a lot about the rules in Parliament.
For months, opposition parties, predominantly the established Democratic Alliance and the new far-left Economic Freedom Fighters, have challenged the ANC over a scandal involving President Jacob Zuma. The president is accused of spending about $23 million in public funds on improvements to his private home. Mr. Zuma described the improvements, which include an amphitheater and a swimming pool, as security upgrades befitting a head of state. The nation's corruption watchdog disagreed and ordered him to pay back some of the money. But a parliamentary committee, composed entirely of ANC members, cleared him this week of any wrongdoing and fiscal responsibility. So an angry opposition launched a 7-hour filibuster Thursday night to try to delay adoption of that ruling. Opposition leaders from all parties hurled insults at the president. Among them, comparisons to longtime Zairean dictator Mobutu Sese Seko and Ugandan tyrant Idi Amin. The Speaker of Parliament tried to bust the filibuster. That's when the riot police bust in, which in turn led to a scuffle and some busted lips. The DA is pressing charges and says it will no longer recognize the ANC Speaker of the House. Here's DA parliamentary spokesman Mabine Seabe.
For them to come into the House and assault members is completely unacceptable. I mean, it's pushing us towards the verge of a constitutional crisis where members are protected by parliamentary privilege in terms of what they say. I mean, if the Speaker had acted in a righteous manner, she would have de-escalated the issue by suspending the member and continuing the business of the House, and instead called in riot police who subsequently assaulted members of the Economic Freedom Party and our party, the Democratic Alliance.
But the ANC says this is the opposition's fault for trying to bring anarchy into the chambers. ANC parliamentary spokesman Moloto Motapo says order needed to be restored.
It is an affront to the sacrifices that our people died for. To achieve this democratic parliament. We will continue to protect the integrity as well as the decorum of this institution and shun any form of anarchy and thuggery that we have seen from members of the EFF and the DA.
Analyst Matega says the ANC needs to rethink its strategy in dealing with challenges to its leadership.
I believe that indeed the ANC is not using its majority in the rightful manner. The party seems not to be trying to reach consensus. And this kind of tension is resulting in what you can call some form of coalescence of the opposition party. I mean, you have seen the DA, EFF, COP, and other opposition parties actually being united in this. Is this going to last longer, this kind of unity?
He doesn't know, he says. But it's clear that for the first time ever, the ANC may have a fight on its hands. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
From politics, we now move to science. The World Health Organization has established a criteria for conducting clinical trials on experimental drugs and other therapies for the treatment of Ebola. Members of the WHO Scientific and Technical Advisory Committee on Ebola Experimental Interventions say great care must be taken to ensure the safety of a drug before any testing is done on humans to evaluate its effectiveness. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Everyone is looking for a cure for Ebola, but there is nothing yet on the horizon. However, the scientific community has proposed interventions, including vaccines, convalescent blood and plasma, and medicines in its search for answers. WHO's advisory committee notes none of these interventions has yet been evaluated for efficacy against Ebola virus disease. Therefore, it says clinical studies to assess their safety and efficacy are required. Martin Frieda is a scientist in public health, innovation, and intellectual property at WHO. He says it is difficult to know whether people who contracted Ebola in West Africa and were sent home to the United States and countries in Europe recovered because of the drugs they were given or because they received a high standard of care. Because of this uncertainty, he says the committee agrees that novel drugs must be tested in a situation where this care is standardized.
Because if there's variation in the care that the patients are receiving, it's going to be very difficult to determine whether a survival or lack of survival is either due to the drug being efficacious, the drug being toxic, or to variations in the standard of care that the patients are receiving.
Unfortunately, Dr. Frieda says, there are only a handful of centers in Ebola-infected countries where the standard of care is good and consistent enough for clinical trials to occur. He says there are more drugs and interventions to test than there are facilities to test them.
We at WHO have received somewhere in excess of 120 propositions of products. And people say, we would like to test these products. And we have possibly between 6 and 8 clinical trials where such products could be tested. So there is therefore a need for us to prioritize which products are actually going to go into these clinical trials. Otherwise, it's going to be complete chaos.
The committee hit another roadblock in settling upon a uniform method of data collection during the clinical trials. Currently, Dr. Frieda notes, everybody is evaluating drugs using different sets of data collection.
We will not, in the end, be able to compare and contrast results. And we could finish up with having lots of trials done and no usable data because all of the trials were too small. So we learned about a data collection form, which has been harmonized, which will be used by several groups. And this is going to facilitate data collection and sharing data across multiple trial sites.
Dr. Frieda says the committee has been informed that clinical trials of convalescent whole blood and plasma are ready to start in 2 affected countries, Guinea and Sierra Leone. He says they are in the planning stages. He says patients have to be tested because there is little evidence that blood and blood-derived products are efficacious in the treatment of Ebola. He says it is essential to get good quality and safe blood from Ebola survivors. Therefore, the blood must be drawn in a controlled manner to make sure no diseases are transmitted. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song You're One in a Million by Justin Simpleman. Malmano, Talo Ina, Jabulo, Kama, Inurirama, Iwamala, Malmano, Talo Ina, Jabulo, Kama, Inurirama, Iwamala, Malmano, Talo Ina, Jabulo, Kama, Wayamu, Makuri, Yetwa, Awinukuruma, Kendali, Wayamu, Makuri, Yetwa, Awinukuruma, Kendali, Ibaru, we are pretty quitty, Puri Lingin and Tiburi, Kemba, Ibaru, we are pretty quitty.
Million, you're better than them, my love.
I know for your one with you.
One in a million, you're better than them, my baby.
I know for your one with you.
One in a million, you're better than them, my love.
I know for your one.
Biru tell you, Leru Gong, Mirima, it's in a guy, Timodon, and Nekumeli Wang.
Biru tell you, Leru Gong, Mirima, it's in a guy, Timodon, and Nekumeli Wang.
What don't lawyer keep looking? Kaitingera, La Tora.
We've been listening to Justin Simpleman with the song You're One in a Million. I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Well, Nabil, I enjoyed your company co-hosting this show this week.
Likewise,
I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.